Welcome to episode 24 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. I am Rollo McFlugel, and with me is Slappy Jones, too, and we are both at McFlugel.com. This episode will be for January 30th, 2017. The show notes page for this episode is McFlugel.com/24, where you will find links to subscribe to the podcast and other ways to connect with us, as well as a link to send Bill Kristol on an Iraqi vacation so he can see all the handiwork that his proposals in support of all his wars has done. So you can get a firsthand look of all that. And any proceeds that we get for that will be donated to antiwar.com. Also, as we started doing last week, ever since Donald Trump was elected president and is now serving, we're keeping account of all of the minority groups that he has killed in the United States while in office. And last week that number was zero. We expected that number would greatly rise up again, and it's still zero this week. So maybe next week it'll be up in that few hundred thousands to a million range that we, you know, all expected. So we'll see. So with that, I'll pass it over to Slappy, and he will introduce our guest for today.
Well, thank you, Rollo. Today we have a special guest with us coming from the UK. Her name is Emily Pont. She writes for We Are Change, an activist post, and she also is actively supporting the release of Ross Ulbricht, who we've talked about on this show and several times on our blog. She works to expose corruption and raise awareness for important issues that are falsified by our lovely mainstream media, and also for our rights to free speech and against political correctness. She likes to get into philosophical discussion regarding theoretical science topics. And thanks for joining us, Emily.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And Rollo.
A few weeks ago, Julia Churyansky of Brave the World, who, by the way, produces a lot of great content, so if you don't already follow her, I highly recommend it. But she made a post on Facebook with talking about it's kind of delusions that we have about being happy and what goes on in the world. And we wanted to bring Emily on to kind of talk these ideas through. So I'm going to read this post right now. We'll link to it on the show notes page as well for you to go and read it yourself too. Being nice to everyone is not a virtue. It makes you a lying fool. Loving everyone is not a virtue. It reduces the very meaning of love to nothing. Being happy all the time is not a virtue. It's delusion. Being positive all the time is not a virtue. It's as bad as being negative all the time. There isn't always a silver lining. Things happen for no reason at all, just as often as they happen for a reason, and it's too hard to discern. It's always meant to be, so saying so means nothing. And finally, try looking inwards and taking responsibility before you look on the bright side. So it's there's a lot there. And maybe with that in the context, you can interpret it in a lot of different ways, which is probably a good thing. So we're not trying to necessarily say what Julia Churyansky of Brave the World meant, because that's for her to say. So we're just using it as a jumping off point for our own ideas. So if you want to ask her what she thinks about this stuff.
Yeah, so when we were having our discussion, I kind of disagreed with a lot of that, because I think I prefer to be happy. It doesn't mean I need to lie to myself to be happy. Of course, I have plenty of times I'm unhappy or angry or mad or sad or whatever. But I think it is a good thing to strive to be happy, but it wouldn't be a good thing to lie to yourself or to others. And I certainly agree that when something goes wrong, you should definitely look inward and see how you messed up. But then, after I do that, I think of a way how I can make it better, or how next time that won't happen. And in my head, I see that as kind of putting a silver lining on it. Like, you know, I just lost a sale, or I just lost one of my customers at work. Look back at what I did. Okay, I did this, or I did that, or I forgot to send them this. That sucks. I lost my client. So how am I going to learn from this mistake and going forward, not make it? And so, like Rollo said, I didn't have context when I read that. And so I don't know what her meaning was there, what she was trying to get at. But depending on how you spin it, I don't necessarily agree with all that. And I just want to know what your thoughts are, Emily, on that Facebook post.
Well, one of the points you said was that everything happens for a reason. And I thought that kind of, especially in negative situations, trying to kind of justify it with everything happens for a reason is kind of a cop-out way of kind of putting that blame onto something that you can't really define or something that's kind of completely out of your control to kind of just shift off any sort of responsibility. So I agree that you should definitely look inwards when you make mistakes, because that's the only way you're really going to grow as a person, rather than trying to kind of put it down to something that you can't define as an easy way to kind of get out of responsibility. When she said about being nice to everyone and that it's not a virtue, it makes you lying fool, I do agree with that, especially with, well, to an extent, I think you should, you know, you should be kind to people when you can, but you shouldn't kind of accept everything and tolerate everything that people do if you really don't think it's acceptable, that sort of thing. So, but I do agree with quite a lot of it. And what you said about being happy, I definitely agree with that. You should strive to be happy, but you shouldn't lie to yourself or that sort of thing. So that's my general stance on those sort of things.
Yeah, I agree. As far as the, you know, it's all, oh, it's always meant to be. That's kind of one of those thought terminating cliches.
Yeah, it is.
Up there and say, well, that's the way it goes. Or, you know, you win some, you lose some. And it just, it doesn't give you much of a jumping off point to do any sort of improvement. And maybe people just say that as a way to just in the moment, you know, put it into perspective. And I certainly use those sayings sometimes. You know, it's, we're not trying to be robots and never have a room to, you know, just say stuff. But, yeah, as far as being nice to people, yeah, I think it's a good thing to strive to treat everyone well and be nice and kind and you know, turn the other cheek. But there are some just nasty people out there who will take advantage of you. And I think that if you, because I used to think, I get along with everyone, and you know, I have no reason to ever not get along with anyone. And you know, if I'm just nice to them, they'll be nice to me. And I learned that's not always true. And it's not every, it's a small number of people, at least in my experience. But I think if you kind of have that delusion or being nice to everyone, if you think that being nice to everyone is a virtue, maybe the word virtue is the word, because I do think you should strive to be kind to everyone. And, but, I think you do have to react a little bit with how they treat you, and not just, because if you're just kind of, I'm going to be nice to this person no matter what, there's people that are going to take advantage of that. And so it's kind of a delusion type thing.
Well, does being nice mean being naive or stupid? Because I can be nice to someone and not trust that person and not even like that person.
Right. So I guess, Emily, do you have any ideas on the basic ethical idea of how to treat other people?
Let's say someone is a total jerk and not a good guy and doesn't do good things. Is it wrong, or are you lying to treat that person with respect? You know, generally walking past, you know.
Yeah. I don't think you should have sort of a moral obligation to treat someone nicely who's being, you know, a really horrible person or doing something that you just don't think is acceptable. You should be kind to people in general, but for their personal growth and for your own, you should, you know, call them out on what they're doing. You shouldn't just tolerate everything, because that's just, as you said, it's just going to let people take advantage of you, and it's not going to help them in the long run. They need, you know, if you think they should know something, if they're doing something wrong and you think they should know that, then I think it's more of a, you should feel more of a moral obligation to call them out on it and talk about it rather than let things slide like that.
Yep. And one thing, it's kind of funny we're talking about this, because we're talking, and or at least I'm talking about, you know, the very rare cases where there are someone that you just isn't a good person you're talking to, whereas I think a lot of mainstream society allows for, if you just don't like someone, what someone stands for even a little bit, whether or not you met them, you can just go out in the street and get a group of people and just scream horrible things about them, and, you know, as we see now, punching them in the face. So we're not, it's funny because we're getting in the weeds on this one, and it's good and it's great. And I think we should. But I think someone on the outside might be listening to this and being like, oh, this is kind of obvious stuff. But then they turn around and go on a march and just treat people with whom they just have disagreements on political philosophy.
Yeah.
And just treat them like absolute garbage. So it's, I think the problem with how we're treating each other is it is a problem. And I think when you get wrapped up in allowing other ideas to kind of pervade through instead of looking at them as a person.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. There's always sort of people just acting so horribly to each other, and it only over, you know, politics. And if it's not something personal, that, you know, if it's not a personal issue, I can't see how people are getting so angry over it. It's sad how people are just have so full of hate for other people simply because of their ideology.
Right. It's like, you know, if I met Hillary Clinton, she's one of those bad people that I think is more evil people in the world. I wouldn't, you know, walk, oh, hi, Miss Clinton. Let me shake your hand. I would, you know, ignore her and turn the other way. I have absolutely nothing to do with her. So that's how I would deal with a person who I think is a horrible, evil person. Yeah. Whereas people who mainstream, it's, you know, oh, you get to get a group of people and scream at them at a protester. It was funny. I was at a baseball game, standing over the bullpen, and there's a woman heckling and screaming at the catcher. And when he was done warming the pitcher up, she was asking for him to toss the ball up to give to her son. And he just, he faked threw it at her and laughed at her. And she got all offended. But like, what are you, you're being a horrible person to him for the last 45 minutes. You know, and that's something simple. It's just, he's wearing a different color shirt. And so, you know, you're acting like he's the worst person in the world. It's kind of funny because I think if someone saw me interact with Hillary Clinton the way I just described, I think most people would think, oh, you're actually being a jerk there, because, you know, you disagree with her politics. But it's kind of funny that when it's the people who are involved in the direct involvement in killing others and, you know, doing all sorts of horrible things, you got to be really, really nice to them. But when there's just Joe Schmo on the street, it says, actually, I want to vote for so-and-so. They're the most horrible, evil person in the world. And you get to say whatever you want.
I was going to say, if you were angry at everyone who disagreed with you politically, you'd be a very angry person all the time, pretty much.
So maybe that's where we can start taking this is, you know, I don't know exactly what all of your political philosophies are, Emily. So maybe that's a good thing. So we can kind of talk and, I said, you know, how I would deal with Hillary Clinton, you know, and she's someone who would have a direct involvement in wars. And so she's directly responsible. What about the people that would, you know, vote for her? And they say that, you know what, I do think it's okay to go out and, you know, kill, or, you know, you're talking about Ross Ulbricht earlier. Someone who says, yeah, he committed a crime. We should, you know, fry him, you know, do
it's
whatever we
law.
Gotta do. Right. So how do we interact with them? Someone who isn't directly responsible for espousing or for committing these bad acts that the state normally does, but, you know, absolutely supports it. And because I've had someone one time said, yeah, we should go and kill all the kids in the Middle East because they're the next terrorists. I was like, what? I decided at that point I didn't want to have anything to do with them. You know, do we chalk that up to just being ignorance, and, or do we say, or take that more seriously and really say, hey, we want to, that's a good reason to dissociate from someone.
I think it's a bit of both. I think mostly it's about ignorance. Most people who support the state and that sort of will very strongly support a kind of really strong government control, very ignorant to actually things that they've done, the harm they're causing to humanity. I'm quite as strong, I say, in my libertarian beliefs. So anything that kind of really harms other people for no good reason, especially Ross, you know, it's I'm very against that. But I think people who very strongly support the state are ignorant to a lot of things, that a lot of harm they're doing. And I think it's good to try and educate them, but it's a lot of ignorance and arrogance as well with some people, because I've had interactions with people who are, you know, trying to inform about issues that the government, you know, just really bad things the government are doing, and they just don't want to hear it because it kind of breaks their paradigm of it breaks their paradigm of liking that control and not seeing anything wrong with it. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And to that, I agree that there's ignorance, and I used to be a, you know, rah-rah Republican and supporting wars and taxes and everything. It's because I don't want to dismiss it as, oh, just didn't know any better, but that's what I grew up with.
And
that's what basically everyone in the world grows up with. So,
which brings me, Emily and I were talking off the air earlier, which I thought this was really interesting, Emily, over in the UK. I imagine you didn't learn about libertarianism in school. So since we have you on, would you mind telling that story again? Of how you became a libertarian, how you found this. I think that's so impressive. It's hard enough in the United States, where we apparently have this whole freedom thing ingrained in us. But us over here, we think all you over there are socialists. So how did you find libertarianism?
It was through the free road. It was through the Silk Road case. I was kind of following it. I just found out about it just maybe over a year and a half ago. And the sentence that Ross got was just absolutely insane. He's a non-violent person with no criminal record. No, you know, he seemed like a really decent guy, and it just seemed insane that he got double life for essentially creating a website. And so I looked kind of further into his philosophy and found libertarianism through that, and really resonated with me. And the more I kind of found out about the corruption of the Silk Road, the more I kind of really kind of got into libertarianism and started exploring that. And just going through kind of the chat logs on the Silk Road site, it's such a beautiful, like, libertarian philosophy that DPR was kind of putting out there. And it just kind of made me see ideologically in like a very different light to what I've been exposed to over here, which was just mostly socialism and that sort of thing, because that is very predominant over here. So that's kind of how I got into libertarianism. And it just kind of grew and grew as I kind of learned more about Ross's case and people related to that and the community that was just there. It was, yeah.
So was the case big over there?
I hadn't heard about it. I had to look. I just came across it online.
Okay.
And so it wasn't really big.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
You came
it that way, and it goes to show that and it even ties back into what we're originally talking about, that maybe just tangentially, but there's good, as horrible as this whole the Ross Ulbricht case is, and how tragic and it burns me up that any of it happened, that there's good coming out of it.
There's your silver lining, right?
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with the way the family's handling it and the way the kind of person Ross is. But Lynn Ulbricht is an absolutely amazing woman, and what she's done, you know, most people, it would be absolutely, no one would bat an eye if your son gets taken away from you for life and you just say, you just kind of bottle yourself up and go away in a corner. But she's like done nothing but work and spread the message and has, you know, touched a lot of lives and acts as a role model. And, you know, I look at Lynn Ulbricht and, you know, really, really, truly look up to her. Yeah. And so, you know, Ross Ulbricht and his family has had a huge positive impact on me and thousands of other people too. So, it's nice that there's an example. Well, and to read the exact quote from the text, there isn't always a silver lining. Well, this might be one of those, you know, not always things. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to.
Yeah, it doesn't change the fact that Ross is still in prison.
Right. You know, we don't. And that's maybe where people get led astray, is that they find something good in a bad situation, they say, there's the good. That's good enough. But
So on that, Emily, what are you doing in the UK, if anything? I mean, I can't imagine there's a big libertarian community there. Do you have any local groups or websites you write for in the UK? Is there anything you can do, talking to friends or?
It's very hard to kind of find anyone who's interested in libertarianism and that sort of thing here. But I hosted an event a couple of weeks ago to try and kind of raise awareness about the Silk Road case. So I put on Deep Web documentary and had a Skype in with Lynn just to kind of get more awareness for the case and get those philosophies out there more. But as it stands, nothing's really in the UK. It's a lot more like I do writing for kind of We Are Change and Activist Race, which is in America, because it's just much more prominent with the those sort of philosophies over there. But there's not much. There's no kind of group libertarian groups or that sort of thing over here that I know of, anyway.
Well, you never know. I mean, Slappy and I, when we first started talking about libertarianism and doing the website, we're like, I don't know if there's any, because we're from around the Philadelphia area. And we're looking for, maybe we should start a group and try to find and cultivate other libertarians. And then lo and behold, there's a huge network that we had no idea. You know, we're looking for it, but it was right under our noses. So you never know. Hopefully, you start finding like-minded people. And then also, it sounds like you are cultivating. So that's awesome. And it does work.
Yeah.
Because we've done it with ourselves, mostly with friends, and make sure we have like this little monthly meetup group where we sit down and talk about, you know, whatever we want to talk about. And it's, you know, you're supposed to go in and, you know, hear everybody out. And it ends up always being, we don't need the state is what Slappy and I bring. And people have, you know, the average person, if you were to bring that up to them, they'd say, you're crazy. That's stupid. But when you sit them down and first you give them a topic that they're talking about and you sit there and listen to them and show them respect. And then when it's time to talk about your idea, which normally would be absolutely crazy to them, then they're a lot more likely to be willing to sit down and listen to you and actually talk to you as a person and discussing the ideas. I'm actually amazed with how people have changed over the course of, I guess it's been like a year and a half we've been doing it, but that's awesome. How was your, what kind of turnout did you get for the show?
Quite good. About maybe 60 people, 60.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. I was very happy with it. And a couple of people from that, it was really good because, as you said about kind of listening to people and getting them to see your way of mind, about two people who came to the event really strongly supported the case after that and became kind of libertarians.
That's really cool. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's the way we've found that to talking to people that aren't libertarian, how to get them in is you got to find that, you know, excuse this term, but trigger point for them.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, everyone has something about the government that they don't like and probably that they absolutely hate and despise and loathe. So as, you know, libertarians, we don't like anything the government does. So you can always find something you can agree with someone on about the problems of the state. And then you just, you know, you slowly expand off that. And, you know, there's potential in just about everyone.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Do we have any final thoughts on what we're talking about? It's,
I mean, I just want to thank Emily for joining, and hopefully we could have her on again. We could talk about Ross Ulbricht or anything else, you know, the PC culture in the world and how that compares here toward over there and what we can do about it. And is it as dangerous as we say it is, or is it as righteous as they say it is? I think there's some good topics we could have in the future if you'd ever want to come back on again.
Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great.
Right. So, Emily, can you tell us where people can find you?
any articles I write on We Are Change Directors post, so you can find me there, and on Twitter at ms2612.
Okay. Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes page. And Slappy, or Emily, well, what we do after every episode is talk about a market success story. So I know we're putting you on the spot, and if you want to defer, that's fine, because I'm having trouble thinking of one this morning. But Slappy, unless you have something, Emily, go for it. But otherwise, Slappy.
Slappy.
All right. Well, let's see. So what could I have for the market this week? I'm unprepared. We're recording this at 4:30 in the morning Eastern time on a Sunday morning, so my mind isn't all here.
I have the obvious one right now. So okay. We mentioned that Slappy and I are in the Philadelphia area, and Emily's in the UK, and we're having a conversation live right now. Now you'll hear the recording of it, which is good because my internet cracked, stopped in the middle of it.
Editing.
Yeah, there'll also be some editing magic. And that's another thing. So 5 years ago, it would, to be able to do this, there's three average people just to be able to one day agree. You know, we set it up first. We're able to find each other, which is amazing. You know, different places around the world, and say, hey, let's record ourselves talking and then put it up for other people. And outside of the cost of, you know, when we originally bought our computers and buying the internet connection, we didn't have to pay for this. So it's, 10 years ago, it probably would have cost, unbelievable amounts of money to try to set all this up. And before that, it's just no amount of money would have been able to accomplish it. So it really shows the power of the market.
Well, even just think of how we became libertarian. I mean, Rallo and I would talk on the front porch about stuff, but we were still both Republicans. Who knows if we ever get to this point without the internet?
Right. Because I went online and saw, people talking about anarchy and anarcho-capitalism and thinking that. Isn't that like throwing Molotov cocktails and stuff?
Yeah, crushing windows and burning buildings down.
Yep. So, what did I have? No, that's it, I guess.
All right.
So, yeah, show notes page is mcflugel.com/24, where you will find links to the Facebook post that we're talking about. Also, we'll link to Emily's Twitter account and activist post and We Are Change, so you can check out all the stuff she's done. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher there, as well as find us and like us on Facebook and follow Slappy and I on Twitter. So with that, we thank very much for Emily for coming on. It was a great talk. I hope to have you on again sometime soon, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, we'd love to. Thanks. Bye.
Peace.